Hey, this is Rick Casals from ExercisesForInjuries.com. Today I have another interview for you, and today it's with Eric Cressy, and I wanted to kind of chat with him about, you know, training and injuries. I know most people know who Eric is, but Eric, I'll get you to do a little bit of an introduction on who you are for the people that don't know who you are.
Sure, no problem at all. Kind of wear a few different hats in my daily life, but probably the foremost of the bunch is the co-founder and president of Cressy Performance, which is a training facility located about 40 minutes west of Boston. And believe it or not, our primary clientele is actually baseball players. It's about 80 to 85% of our clients. So we deal in that niche, which is obviously a population that's a little bit notorious for having a really high injury rate. So it probably falls right in line with some of the stuff we're going to talk about today. We have lots of, in our professional athletes, there's lots of money on the line in terms of keeping people healthy and making sure that they have the safest training programs possible. But in addition to what we do at Cressy Performance, with training our athletes and clients, I also write and do a fair amount of consulting and doing presentations kind of all over the place. So like I said, I work quite a few hats, and I'm fortunate to be able to have a pretty good reach in a few different capacities, and that's why it's exciting to be on talks like this.
So my thing is injury. So what are some kind of common training mistakes that lead to injuries for people, which ends up kind of slowing down their performance, slowing down their results, and kind of pushes them off, the training program that they're on right now?
I think you can look at it from three different perspectives. The first one would be misuse, so performing an exercise incorrectly and overloading specific tissues that may be stressed excessively. So misuse would be the first one. I think the second one would be disuse, meaning that, the program itself doesn't have the right amount of structural balance, meaning maybe you're doing too much pushing and not enough pulling, so you develop some kind of imbalance in your program. And I know muscle imbalances are right up your alley, so the programming side, I think, certainly matters. So you have that, you have the misuse, you have the disuse, but you also have overuse. So, if you're doing 10 sets of 10 bench presses every other day, that's a condition that could come up and get you and cause an injury. So those are kind of the three ways that I look at it in a very, very general sense. And obviously, it's usually a combination of all three, and that there are certain things that need to be strengthened and certain things that maybe need a little bit more rest. But that's a good way to look at it.
Okay. And, the word injury is kind of a funny thing. I mean, we all probably have some sort of injury while we're walking around. So what's your approach when it comes to injuries and someone's training program? Like, when do you refer out, and when do you modify the exercise program?
I think the thing to remember is that absolutely everybody who's walking around has something structurally wrong with them. So, you can take MRIs of absolutely everybody. We know that 82% of people have disc herniations or bulges in their lower back that we don't even know about. We know that 79% of Major League Baseball pitchers have some kind of abnormal labral feature. We know that people over the age of 50, almost all of them have some kind of rotator cuff tear, whether it's a partial or a full thickness tear. So everyone is injured. I think the question that we should probably be asking is who's symptomatic and who isn't. So who has pain and who doesn't? And that's a tricky thing. Where for me, if someone comes in and they're pain-free walking around, they're pain-free at rest, they're pain-free with their activities of daily living, that's okay. When I start to hear, I only hurt when I overhead press or something like that, that for me is something, I'm comfortable dealing with. I know we can avoid those harmful movement patterns and really work around it and probably get people right long-term. That said, if they have pain reaching up to grab a glass on the shelf, that's more of a concern. That's something you're going to want to refer out. So I think it depends on whether you have pain with exercise, pain with activities of daily living, because there are a lot of different things that can contribute to that, like we handled in our last question. So, what do I tend to always refer out? Anytime I see anybody who has any kind of radicular issues, so whether it's a numbness and tingling down to their arm or their leg, or I tend to refer out all neck issues, anybody who's got chronic tightness, things like that. I tend to refer out a lot of my ankle type issues because a lot of those people do need good manual therapy to do some glides down at the lower leg. It really is an individual thing, but everyone else is, you kind of have to handle it on a one-by-one basis. So, I've had people come in for evaluations who have complained of just having tight hips. In reality, when we put them on the table, we realize, hey, they've probably got a femoral impingement. There's just probably some bone-on-bone contact in that hip. Let's send them to a doctor to get an MRI or an X-ray just to kind of see what's really going on. And the way I look at it, it's never going to hurt to refer out. At the worst case scenario, you're going to wind up getting more information that's going to help you in terms of designing an effective training program for them.
Okay, and I mean, you talk about symptomatic and asymptomatic. When you have a client and you're looking at them and, you know, they're asymptomatic, but, you know, maybe their movements don't exactly match the medical textbook. I mean, when do you kind of go in there and start, you know, trying to move them back to normal range of motion and normal strength, or do you just leave them the way they are?
I think it probably goes in both directions. I mean, put it this way, if they wanted to be the way that they were, they probably wouldn't be coming to us fitness professionals in the first place. So I think you figure out what you can do within your scope of practice. You know, so foam rolling is within our scope of practice, but get them on the table and doing, you know, aggressive, you know, subscapularis soft tissue work is probably outside of our scope of practice. So it really is a 100% individual thing. You know, that said, I think one of my professors back in graduate school said it best when they said, be as aggressive as possible, but do no harm. So I think before you do anything with any client, the first thing you need to ask yourself is, you know, one, will this in any way, you know, put them at risk? And two, not only, you know, will it put at risk, but even if it won't, can I fundamentally justify this in my own brain as something that's going to get them closer to where they want to be? And I think, you know, it sounds like a silly point to make, but you'd be surprised at how many people probably can't necessarily say that. You know, they put an exercise in the program because they think it's cool or because, hey, this is going to make them tired. But, you know, is it going to make them better? Is it going to help them, you know, improve their quality of movement? That's not always an easy question to ask yourself.
Okay. And kind of speaking about the injury side of things, now kind of at what point does someone, you know, continue on training or should they stop and do nothing?
I mean, the problem I think with nothing is, you know, somewhere along the lines, I don't know where it happened, but, you know, just rest is not a good thing. I mean, rest, you know, in a general sense, obviously, is very important, but rest from exercise, I mean, we're dealing with a population that's, you know, over half of us are overweight or obese. You know, I'm not sure that we need to encourage people to rest. You know, maybe abstain from certain movements, but I think people on the whole need to move. I mean, you know, you can put that in the context of resistance training enhances immune function, enhances endocrine function. You know, it improves like long-term, you know, functional capacity into older adulthood. You know, we know that, you know, just exercise improves digestive health. You know, so I mean, think about what happens to people when they're on bed rest and all the things that go wrong. I'm not saying, you know, we're comparing this to not moving, period, but I think there is something to be said about always finding that there is something you can do to make people better. So, you know, just because you have a shoulder issue doesn't mean that you can't train your lower half and train the opposite side and all that. So there's still a lot people can do. So I've never been a big fan of rest as a viable recommendation to people. I think more often than not, it's a little bit of a lazy diagnosis. It's, you know, something more to – people try to get – they try to contraindicate people and not exercise, and I don't think that's the way to approach it.
Oh, cool. Okay. And looking at, like, your – you know, athletes, when they end up getting injured, how do you kind of break down the goals to get them from where they are now to get them back to, you know, playing their sport at whatever level they were at?
Yeah, I think it's going to depend on the injury itself. You know, it's a lot different to pull your groin than it is to tear your ulnar collateral ligament. So a UCL reconstruction, you're waiting, you know, 11 months to get back to full activity need, and then you're probably not going to be 100% ready until about 18 months when your graft, you know, truly settles. You know, conversely, you pull your groin, you do some soft tissue work, you do the right mobilization, you do a return to running program, and people can be back out there in 2 or 3 weeks. So I think, you know, the two different perspectives are important to appreciate, and there's going to be a whole lot of stuff in the middle there as well. You know, so I think everyone is unique, but at the same time, I think that's the first question you have to ask is, you know, is this going to be such a long-term thing that I need to really consider, am I trying to maintain a training effect in the short term? You know, what are the psychological effects on an athlete when he knows he's going to be on the shelf for this extended period of time? Most of the stuff we encounter is more short-term. So you're thinking about, you know, at the highest level, you're thinking about what can I do to get these people back out there sooner than later. You know, when you deal with younger athletes, you're thinking more in the context of, you know, how can I make sure this doesn't happen again while at the same time, you know, maximizing their ability to play. So it's really you're kind of riding a few different horses with one saddle with this stuff. But I'm not sure that it's an easy answer to the questions because everything is completely different. I mean, you'll see people with shoulder pain that come in. They have, you know, 5 minutes of manual therapy that feels like $1 million, and they don't have shoulder pain for the rest of their career again. So everyone's unique.
Okay. And looking at, like, when it comes to injuries, how does, you know, nutrition and environment play a factor when it comes to recovery from the injury?
I think it's huge. You know, I think a lot of people get hurt because of the nutritional stuff. The big players that I look at are, you know, how is their vitamin D quality? I mean, are they adequate vitamin D in terms of their blood work? Do they take in enough essential fatty acids? You know, there are a lot of different factors I look at on the nutritional side of things that can dramatically impact what people, you know, do in terms of, you know, their performance in the gym. You know, look at people who just crush energy drinks all the time. Are they overloading their adrenals and maybe making themselves more susceptible, you know, to problems down the road? It's a very interesting science and one that I think is really just starting to take off now. I think the other thing to consider about it, though, is, you know, it's one thing to know what you need to do nutritionally. It's another thing altogether to do it. So you'd be amazed at how many high-level athletes are walking around with six-packs who, you know, look absolutely fantastic, but you look at their blood work on the inside, and it's like, oh, my God, how can they do what they do? I mean, these people are on the track to getting, you know, cancer, having a heart attack when they're in their early 40s. So it's pretty scary stuff.
Okay. And now, I mean, you put a lot of programs together, and you guys kind of focus in on, you know, athletes and professional athletes and that kind of things, but you've also kind of put a program together that, you know, a wide variety of people can end up using, and you've called it Show and Go. So maybe you can kind of give us a little bit of background on, you know, what that is and how it can help people out there.
Yeah, absolutely. So Show and Go is a program that encompasses 4 months of training, and each one of those months actually has options for 2 times a week, 3 times a week, and 4 times a week strength training. So it's pretty versatile in the context of, you know, people kind of adapting it to their schedule. So the programs are written on the actual templates that we use with our clients here at Crestview Performance. And, you know, it's kind of interesting that we'll take a little bit of a peek into our world. So one of the real goals that we try to make, you know, with Show and Go is that we wanted to show people that there's a way to make maybe a general program more versatile so it's suited to everyone's unique needs. So there's, you know, four unique training programs, so 16 weeks of total training. There's some frequently asked questions that go in there and all that in the main manual. And there's an online database that covers over 175 exercises that are featured in the program. So like I mentioned, we use the exact training templates we use here so people can print them out and record everything they do with each session. You know, there's everything imaginable included. There's 5 different supplemental conditioning options, from movement training to interval work to no conditioning for those who are trying to gain weight. You know, each phase has a full mobility warm-up. And one thing that I think is pretty cool, too, is we do actually put an entire chapter and section in the video database all about exercise modifications for those who may have limited equipment access. So if you're working out at home, you don't have a squat rack or a cable column, you know, we give you modifying exercises you can plug in. Likewise, we have, you know, stuff for people who have, you know, mobility issues that may prevent them from performing a specific exercise. So if you're someone who doesn't have the hip mobility to squat deep, we give you a substitution for that. There's a bunch of bonuses that are attached to it. Both, you know, Tony Jamacore and Brett Contreras did some stuff for us, and Chris Howard did an innovative soft tissue strategy, you know, video database for us as well. So there's quite a bit of stuff, and, you know, I think one thing that's pretty cool is, additionally, is that there's actually a quick reference video guide. So if you're on your BlackBerry or your iPhone at the gym and you need a little exercise tutorial, you can pop on and click through, and as long as you have internet access, you can check out whatever video it is you need to view.
Okay, so, you know, really kind of gives the person out there kind of a sneak peek what you guys do at Crestview Performance, and kind of helps them set up a program for themselves to kind of reach their, you know, performance and strength goals.
I missed the first part of your question.
Oh, so the Show and Go Show and Go program is kind of, you know, gives people an insight in what you guys do at Crestview Performance, and it allows them to kind of design a program that'll help them kind of reach their goals, what they might be, performance or strength.
Yeah, absolutely. that's it. It gives you a little step inside our world. Just see how we structure different templates. How we'd write a 2 times a week program that might be appropriate for, you know, a triathlete or an athlete who's in season, versus a 3 times a week program for someone who may want to do full body lifts instead of an upper body, lower body split, and, you know, how we would set up that 4 times a week option for someone who wanted to get more frequency of lifting and break things up a little bit more. And, you know, I think it's cool in the sense that you can plug different things in, you know, for metabolic conditioning. And that's really what makes or breaks a program. You know, you can take a program that might be right for, you know, a sprinter, and all of a sudden you say, hey, you know, when he plays basketball, he needs to condition a little bit more. So, you know, you can tinker with it very easily and make it right for that individual. So, you know, it can't be 100% individualized to everything, but, you know, I can be bold and say that I think this does it as well as any product there is on the market.
Okay. And then how would Show and Go be a benefit to, you know, health and fitness professionals out there?
I think it's always a good thing to get out and observe how other people write programs. So that's a valuable thing. We have a lot of people that come and observe at Cressy Performance for a day or two here and there just to kind of see how things work and review our program and how we coach. So sometimes it's good to get out of your own comfort zone and see what's out there. You know, that said, I think there are quite a few exercises that people would pick off on and, you know, see how we structure our overall mobility programs and the strength training programs and how the flow of the session works. So I think most of them would really appreciate probably the video database above all else because it gives the team more things to add to their exercise index. And, you know, we've had, trainers out there who have kind of used our programs as templates to work from. You know, substitute certain exercises here and there, and that kind of just dictates the flow of their sessions a little bit.
Okay. And then just kind of wrapping up, where can people get more information about you and what you do?
Sure. Probably the easiest bet is to check me out at ericcressy.com. It's ericcressy. Got a free newsletter and daily blog. We kind of throw all kinds of fun stuff in, whether it's, you know, webinars or videos or, you know, writing updates, whatever it may be. But that's probably the best spot to get me.
Awesome. So thank you very much, Eric, and thank you very much, Exercises for Injuries, you know, blog readers and listeners. I hope you enjoyed the interview, and we will talk to you very soon on another interview, or we will see you on the blog. So this is Rick Kasselich saying take care and bye-bye.